Tonight, our 10-minute speaker is Patty W. from San Diego.
Hi, my name's Patty. I'm an alcoholic. They told me 20 minutes. No. But I gotta make sure I see this. All right, so I'm not nervous. It's a big friendly crowd. Now let me remember what I was gonna talk about. I said that part. I'm an alcoholic. My name is Patty. I used to be an Indian. Wasn't she great last week, that speaker? Oh, I just loved it. I bought her CD tonight to share with people who missed it. She was terrific. The speaker last week, if you weren't here, was you know, a big liar. And she pretended for 10 years she was an Indian and she had, you know, no relation to Indians. Anyway, I'll start with what it was like and all that. And I first drank when I was a teenager, you know, like in high school already, and probably about 16. And it wasn't my idea. It was somebody else's idea on the camping trip, you know, to bring a bottle or to bring some pot or something. And, but I did. Somebody had the brilliant idea to drink vodka from her father's, you know, liquor cabinet and grapefruit juice at 6 o'clock in the morning, and then drive to school down Grand Avenue, you know, on report card day in the middle of the school year. And she and I both got suspended for 3 or 4 days or something, and another one got away with it. But that almost ruined my chance for an AFS scholarship after high school, which was a student exchange program where, you know, you get to go off and live with a family in another country and learn their language and go to school for a whole year, that sort of thing. And I, you know, there was one teacher who didn't want me to represent our school, my school, and our country and all that. But, you know, we got priests and everybody to write letters, and off I went. And so I was 17. I was always young in school from when I was in first grade, and some little wacky, you know, thing. But so I went off to Belgium when I was 17 and moved in with this really nice family, a big family. And Belgium, some of you may not know, is famous for the best beer in the whole world. And part of my intercultural, you know, exchange responsibility was to appreciate that. And they loved it that I loved it, and I got big attention. You know, the father of the family I lived with was a carpenter, and payday was Friday. You know, I work for my brother who's a contractor now. Same thing, payday Friday, and all the subcontractors come, and they're, you know. So he would bring me in, you know, to meet the, you know, the tile guy and the electrician and everybody, and, you know, make me say nasty words that I didn't know what they meant, and it was so funny with my accent. And then, you know, and then they'd offer me a beer, and I always picked the, you know, the Trappist, you know, the really dark one that I loved the most. And they thought that was really funny too, and so it just worked for me. I just loved that beer, and loved being 17 and being able to drink beer, you know, on an intercultural mission. And where the drinking age here was 21. So then I came home from Belgium after the year. It was all great, and you know, remembered them and missed them, and drank beer in their honor, you know, for the rest of my life for 35 years. And I drank other things too. I drank everything, and I smoked a lot of pot. And you know, if we're going off to a, you know, margarita party, well, I'd have my beer first and then go off to the party. You know, we hear these stories. So that's kind of how it started. But it was always fun, and I didn't do a lot of falling down kind of stuff. I did, you know, I drove drunk, but never gotten a whole lot of trouble. And then about 10 years ago. My daughter, my oldest daughter, I have two daughters, was this bright, you know, happy very bright child and talented, and she started to fail medically, and she had an unnamed neurodegenerative disease for 8 years. It was only 2 years ago was diagnosed as Lyme's disease, chronic fucking Lyme disease. It's a really nasty thing. And but nobody knew what it was, you know. And she just kept failing and, you know, couldn't walk for, you know, a few years and then would walk and couldn't speak. And we learned sign language and we went nuts. We just went crazy. And it was constant. It was always, you know, seizures and all new symptoms. And, you know, her hand would close up and then 6 months later would open up again, you know. But we had to then to go physical therapy and I had to learn to do it right. And I never did it right. And, oh, I'm so stupid, fat and ugly. She told me every day that because she was so uncomfortable and so unhappy and... oh, I'm glad I had the beer because, you know, I needed it then. I'd start drinking as, you know, as soon as I got home from work or something, and that was it then, you know, three beers and, you know, sleep on the couch. And it was really rough, and, you know, it just wasn't diagnosed. It was just awful. My husband and I were accused of Munchausen by proxy, which is where the parents like poison the children. You know, that's what the head of neurology at Kaiser suggested. And so in all that time, I never knew what it was, and I never knew what to do. And all I, you know, the only thing that helped was, you know, drinking. And so it got bad, and I had heard stuff about AA, and I would, you know, I heard something about 30 days, so I wouldn't drink for 30 days, and see, I don't have a problem. And I'd start drinking again, and of course, you know, it was worse, and I'd have to drink a little earlier and drink a little taller ones and stuff. And so that's the kind of drinking I did. And then this little daughter, just, you know, as freaky as the disease was, and she still has it, but it all of a sudden, she got better. You know, the wheelchair bus pulled up in front of the house. By then, she was at a school, with one-on-one, you know, supervision and stuff. And still, they needed like three on her because she'd be climbing the high fence to, you know. And the wheelchair bus came, and she said, you know, I don't need the wheelchair bus today. And she walked onto the, you know, all wobbly onto the bus and sat up in the seat and went off to school. And just for the next year, just got better and better and kept moving to, you know, higher functioning schools and freaky. So then she was 15, and it was summer vacation, and she had this little boyfriend from her last school, and she wanted to go meet her friends. And since she had, it had been so up and down, and sometimes she'd been well and sometimes not, we thought, well, you know, she can fail again any time. And she wanted us to take her to the trolley. We took her, and she met the friends and the boyfriend and the friends of the boyfriend, and she kind of had this little teenage life for a short time. And so we'd drive her out to some trolley, and she'd meet the friends, and they'd come from different Lemon Grove, and then they'd go to Parkway Plaza, and then they'd buy crystal meth and smoke it. You know, within a matter of a couple of weeks, she was all of a sudden freaking in the police coming and knocking her down in our backyard and get that cigarette, you know, and, you know, running away and gone for 3 days. And she was just so skinny and wobbly and, you know, so, whew, you know, we were nuts, and now we're really nuts. And so I went to Al-Anon, and I went to, because I couldn't do anymore. I couldn't take it anymore. I didn't know what else to do. It was actually recommended, of course, to me. But I go to a meeting still Wednesday night, Al-Anon for Parents. There's probably a lot of you in here who could use it too. It's rough being a parent, and it's dangerous out there for our kids. And so I was in Al-Anon for a couple of years, and this daughter, you know, got back to, you know, got off the crystal and stuff, and went and got graduated from high school and stuff. But she still was and still is sometimes. Right this minute, the last 2 weeks, she's been doing well, and she's been, you know, loving and stuff towards me. But I think I shared in my Al-Anon meeting that how much I appreciated Al-Anon, and I took the first step there, you know, that I was powerless over alcohol, and I was powerless over that daughter and that illness, whatever that was, it still wasn't diagnosed, and I was powerless over crystal meth and stuff. And That was a big step to take, because I, you know, no more Mayo Clinic, you know, let's just live with what we have. And I think I shared in the Al-Anon meeting that I was so grateful for Al-Anon and that it was helping me to not drink beer anymore or not drink so much or something. And I had heard something about the 30 days, you know. And then that person, somebody in there, noticed I didn't share about it anymore. And she came up to me and she said, you know, I go to AA and I go to a meeting on Thursday nights. That's the next night. Wednesday night was Al-Anon the next night. And then she asked me again a couple weeks later or something like that. And I said, okay. And it was, you know, the hand of AA, you know, the ET, you know, the hand of AA. And she took me to a meeting the next night. And, it was all, like, lucky. The stars were, you know, in alignment. And there was no beer in the fridge. And since I was going out, I didn't buy some. That was the big major step. And off I went with her. And I was in. And she took me to a step study. I still go to it, 6:30 or 6:15 on Thursday nights and on Amherst, not too far from here. And then from that one, she took me to another meeting at the Great Fact Group out in by Grossmont High School. And then I got out of the car. I said, this is weird, you know, something's weird about this. And that meeting starts at 8 o'clock. And I didn't realize until a few weeks later what was weird was that it was night. And I wasn't, you know, on the couch, you know, I was out at night, and it was familiar, something familiar about it. And so right away, you know, I knew I was in the right place, and then I did what you said, because that person told me, just, you know, I said, I don't like all this, you know, the whole book is written, you know, and yeah. You know, like from a man's point of view and, you know, in male language and that old-fashioned stuff, and that was hard for me. And she said, just don't, you know, they mean you. And just do what you're told and just stick with the winners. Watch what they're doing, you know. And they go to step studies. So you have to go to, and then, you know, I start hearing you need a women's meeting. Okay, so I get a women's meeting. So then I got the two Thursdays and then a Friday night. Uh-oh, my time's up. So let me just wrap it up with the moral of the story. Let me think of a big. Anyway, I'm glad I'm here. It's changed my life. I have a God now. I was a loudmouth atheist. That was my religion for a lot of years, and I have a God in me now, and a God in you, and a real personal God, and everything's okay. And thank you for inviting me to share, and thank all of you for being here, everybody in the seat. You know, that's, you saved my life. Thank you. Mm-hmm.